Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinels, J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am once again delighted to be joined by my colleague, Lori Nickel, in the studio with me. Lori, how are you?
Woot, I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Jim Ozarski, he's on the other line. He is in Sacramento, California, site of the movie Lady Bird, which is key. That was an Oscar-nominated movie, and last night was the Oscars. Jim, what was your favorite part of the Oscars? Enough. I don't like where that answer is going. Lori, what was your favorite part of the Oscars?
Hugh Grant did an interview. That was the best thing. Drake Bentley tweeted it and retweeted it. Hugh Grant wanted no part of the cheesy questions that we're forced to ask on red carpet, and I just loved every freaking minute of it.
I don't know why he took the interview, to be quite honest. He
probably somebody thrust him into it. Like, hey, you got to do this.
Hugh Grant is beyond lovely. Everything he does, both in his, like, he plays these flighty characters, but he's like this very he's great off, like, as a person too, but he's kind of crusaded for certain things, and he's, you know, he's like a very smart, brilliant man, and it just does not have time for foolishness, which I deeply respect. So good.
What was your favorite?
You know, I thought it was a pretty boring ceremony. It moved really quickly. None of the wins were surprising to me. I thought all a little disappointing. I would have liked to have seen actually Austin Butler win for Elvis. Did not love The Whale. Brendan Fraser's great. I was a little disappointed by that. And Everything Everywhere All at Once won a whole bunch of things. It was great. It was emotional. It was, you know, it was a movie that I think is just a little overrated, but I do like it. So I'm happy with how that all ended for the most part. Jim, I cut you off completely because I had a feeling you were going to say, I didn't watch the Oscars. Did you not watch the Oscars, Jim?
I mean, it was technically on during dinner, so I can say that I saw the Oscars.
Okay. Jim.
I didn't say I had it on either. You asked me what my favorite part was.
Yes.
I didn't watch a single minute of it.
Hugh Grant uttered a word that I actually am uncomfortable saying on this podcast while presenting an award at the Oscars. So the night kind of belonged to Hugh Grant in a way. We're going to move on from that real quickly, though, before things get completely out of hand and talk about this Milwaukee Bucks team. We're going to start with Giannis Antetokounmpo, mainly because he hasn't played. The Bucks we'll talk about this game against the Warriors on Saturday. I think they actually played okay, even though it ended up kind of a bummer of a finish in San Francisco. But Giannis did not play in that game. The hand soreness issue continues to linger, and I guess that is, you know, a little bit of a concern at this point. Missed a few games in a row. Jim, what do we know about this hand injury? Is this still the precautionary phase? Are there red flags? I mean, give me a lay of the land on this one.
Yeah, so it's obviously this dates back to pre-All-Star break with the sprained wrist in Chicago. This, you know, so it starts there, you know, and, you know, that's February at this point. He technically never missed a game with that injury. He just left early. But in Washington, you know, a few games ago, the fourth, no, excuse me, had that date wrong, but the sixth, he started, looked normal, I think took five shots early, came out, and as I'm watching him on the sideline, he gets the hand attended to by trainer Scott Foss. It's taped up. He kind of fiddles with it for a while, doesn't like it, takes the tape off, finishes the game, but is clearly not shooting at all. And, you know, he ends up with the near almost triple-double, and, you know, I asked him after the game, hey, what's up with the hand? He does his typical Giannis and refuses to acknowledge pain or injury. Mm-hmm. And then now here we are. And, you know, what's precautionary? Like, he's like, it's hurt. You know what I mean? Like, he's Mark Hoffman, our photographer at the Journal Sentinel. There's images. His hand is pretty heavily wrapped. You know, at that last home game against Brooklyn, it's not the playoffs yet, so I guess I have a hard time saying it's this sort of long-term concern, but the fact that he has missed this many games and it's rooted back in that February wrist injury, I don't know, it's a shooting hand, right? Like, it's, you know, it's important. So, you know, he may play tonight as we record this in Sacramento. He's questionable. He got a workout in on the off day. We'll see. But yeah, I would say it's definitely something that's worth monitoring. I don't think it's going to threaten the playoffs, but it may threaten our kind of sort of upcoming topics here, JR, on where Giannis may end up finishing and sort of end of season type of things as this team goes forward.
Yeah, we'll talk about the MVP a little bit. Honestly, with the, I don't know if there's a lot to talk about with the MVP race. It just, Giannis just isn't in it for weird reasons, I feel like. But we will touch on that, and I'll come back to that. Lori, what you know of this Bucks team, we've seen them play without Giannis on occasion, and they're good. They're a good team without Giannis. Obviously, no one thinks they can win an NBA title without Giannis. But let's say there is a scenario where he misses a few games here and there, even in the playoffs. What do you, does that completely negate Milwaukee's ability to advance in the playoffs? Like, where do you think this team could be if they didn't have Giannis for a time or two? Because they are now pretty stacked across the board with alternative options. I just don't know what that would mean in a playoff series necessarily.
I think they're deeper now than they were in the 2021 season, and they had to go a couple of games without him when he bent his knee the wrong way.
Right.
So I think it's actually if you're going to try to find a silver lining in this, it's that they can go through these drills now, these games, without him and figure out who's going to be the leadership role for a long time. That had to be Drew Holiday, who had to play both great defensively and offensively, you know, over time and all that kind of stuff. So I think, yes, they can still win and still vie for a championship without Giannis playing in every playoff game and in every game right now. I think what's interesting to me is that this team is pretty tested right now. So they're 48-19 overall. They're
still the best record in the NBA, right?
Absolutely. And 20-13 on the road, which is really good, and 3-2 in overtime games. Now, in 2021, of course, it was a truncated season with the pandemic, but they were 20-16 on the road, and they were 1-1 in overtime. So, and I really do think this team has more depth, especially when you need scoring output, which we've seen this season. Scoring has been at you know, everybody's scoring more. So I think that's very interesting to me. You know, playoffs get tighter, the scores get lower. So I think they'll be okay. I do think this injury is weird, though. I think it's weird that he came back from it, played without a bandage or a wrap for a while, played with a little something for a while, and then all of a sudden he's out again. I wondered, Jim, if he re-injured it or re-aggravated it, or if he was just stubborn initially and said, I'm fine. And now, you know, with talking to the training staff and the coaching staff, it's not fine. It seems strange that he's missed, you know, March 7th, March 9th, and March 11th games with an injury, and we seem to be regressing a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly something happened in Washington. You know, where that he's sort of attended to during the game. And now Orlando, technically, on the injury report, he was ill in Orlando.
That's
and that
right.
is why he did not play. Not the hand slash wrist, but perhaps if he wasn't sick, you know, that designation would have been there. But you're right, Lori. I do think, you know, not missing any time for the wrist coming out of the All-Star break. He ends up getting that knee, that quad bruise, which he leaves Miami early, misses a Phoenix game with that, plays four straight. Yeah, I do feel like it was that Washington game where it was aggravated to whatever degree. And now they're just sort of like, hey, it's late enough in the year where you can't really keep playing through it. It's almost like, you know, that kind of had to tell him, you know, you're going to need to miss these games here,
right?
Because the way it's going, if you keep getting hit on your hands, it's not going to get any better or more comfortable. So might as well take that time now.
Before we move on from Giannis, let's discuss the MVP thing. Actually, sometimes I've got this segment, the MVP watch. We put it at the end, but let's move it up. Here it is, our MVP watch.
You was last season's most valuable player, as it's called, the MP3. What was that like?
No, I was the MVP.
MP3.
Not the, no, I wasn't.
You was the MP3.
No, I wasn't.
We'll actually talk about some other awards chatter here, because I do want to spend some time with our prince, Brooke Lopez. But Giannis's MVP case is kind of dead in the water. I don't, I don't know if that's overstating it, but he just doesn't come up in these conversations anymore. And part of it is that he has missed these games. And I think we are getting to a point where he's missed enough that you could use that as a data point in somebody else's favor, perhaps. But Nikola Jokic is still kind of the guy that I think everybody's looking at. And if not him, then Joel Embiid. And the one thing I've seen that's a little compelling to me when talking about Jokic is that the way Denver subs, they typically sub out guys in a group. Which is to say, Jokic is almost always playing with the other starters. If he's on the bench, so are the other guys. And that helps him, his efficiency numbers. He's never having to lift up guys who are second or even third string players. He is constantly working with the full group. And even when they rest guys, even when guys all suddenly get hurt, as I'm sure they would defend, it's a lot of guys. It's not just Jokic who sits. It's kind of like four of the starters who will sit in the game. So that does sort of, I don't know if inflate is probably too strong, but that really sets him up for success. Giannis, obviously, with this team, there have been a lot of injuries over the course of the year, and just in general, that's not how Mike Budenholzer does his subbing. So I guess I don't think Giannis at this point should be a front runner for MVP, but his numbers are still really good. I guess I am surprised that he's not in the conversation at all. I don't know. Jim, what is your take on this at this point? I know you wrote about this at jsonline.com this morning.
Yeah, it is interesting. Shaquille O'Neal, if there is looking for a national voice, was the one who thought Giannis was a front runner or should be. I think he's a little underrated. It in that way, like it's not he isn't in that conversation in terms of Jokic. Like Tim Bontemps' ESPN straw poll is pretty accurate, because quite frankly, Timmy polls the voters. Now, granted, it happens once every couple months and minds change, but it tends to be like what it is. And yeah, we could spend an hour on this of the way the goalposts have moved in the last couple years. Sort of the anti-Giannis three in a row case a couple seasons ago seems to not matter anymore. Even the, you know, playing without your starters or key players from a year ago seems to not matter anymore. So it's a very, very strange thing. Giannis has had a great year. Look, I put him number one in the straw poll. I do have a vote this year because I feel like what he did from October through the start of January was highly, highly underrated and pretty, really, really impressive in the context of the Bucks having a best record or top record in the East without so many players and combinations of players. But you're right, though, JR, like in terms of the broader national construct, it's Jokic and Embiid again. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Like those guys, like independent of one another of the year, like you would see their stats and say that's the MVP. So like the last couple of years have been like that with these three guys, and unfortunately only one of them can win.
Lori, I know you don't love talking about
MVPs. I love it.
Oh, you
I
do. You've changed your mind on this.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Give me your thoughts.
Well, Jokic and so that's interesting. Okay. Giannis he played 52 games, right? So it's lower for him. Last I checked, he's fourth in scoring. There's six NBA guys scoring 30 points or more per game on average this year. That's incredible. Giannis doesn't have the three-pointer going for him like some of these other players statistically. And he's trailing Embiid and Jokic in defensive rating, which I don't know how much the voters look at that either. Jim, I don't know if this is your first vote, I think, right? But I just
second one.
Oh, it's your second one. Do you how many, like, do you purely look at, do you measure all these stats, or what do you think the top three stats are that you look for? It's scoring is obviously one, value to the team two, obviously, like if you don't have that team, what are their chances of winning, what is their winning percentage, but what do you think the other most important factors are that you need to look at?
Yeah, I do think availability is part of it. Like for me, I tended to think you got to play in 80% of your team's games. You know, especially for this award, I think there's a little more grace with like all NBA. And so people don't want to do quick, or not 80%, 75%. So quick math, that's 20 games missed. Like that 62 to 65 game range, I feel you should play. And so Giannis is going to be knocking on the door of that. And so he may like literally not play his way out of this conversation if he misses 3-4 more games. I mean, Joel Embiid's missed 13, I want to say. But yes, I think scoring matters. But it's to your last point though, Laurie, I do think it is your team around you to a degree. And what you do. And I think when you're a Jokic or a Giannis, I guess where my personal evaluation comes in, it's like you're almost competing against yourself. Like your standard is your standard. Like Jokic, like Giannis is having a better season in these last couple years. And even this year, I think, than one of his MVP campaigns. Like he sets his own standard. Jokic has set his own standard. Like I don't think Nikola Jokic is really doing anything more or different than he's already done. Yes, I know there's advanced metrics and analytics and whatever. We're not going to get into that stuff. Whereas I think the bar, for instance, for like a Jason Tatum was lower. At the start of the year, I thought Jason Tatum was a front runner in this race with the way Boston was going. So yeah, Laurie, it's I do think games played matters. I think there is sort of a minimum there. You just have to be available. Scoring does matter. Some raw numbers matter. I do like history. I do like, hey, ABC hasn't happened since Wilt. or literally has never happened. And I'm not really going to get into the advanced stuff there because I think back in those days, those numbers didn't exist. And it goes back to, I think if someone told Oscar Robertson that triple doubles were going to be a big deal, like Russell Westbrook would have never touched that record. You know what I mean? So like, I also feel like some of these numbers that we use are helpful and inform things, but in context, what do they really mean? Like when they say he's the first person to have whatever true shooting percentage, like, or whatever, I don't know. So it's kind of a mess, but yeah, I do look at overall impact. I think that's, and your team's got to win. Look, I don't know if I would have voted for Jokic last year. I didn't have that vote. That would have bothered me that a six to a degree. Like I don't, not that you can't have it happen, but you know, there's something to that too.
I always feel like when I'm vote, like I help vote for Heisman, and I kind of look at, if you're the GM of the entire world, what player would you pick? You know, but I do think the NBA MVP is a little different in that it is a small percentage of a team award. It's a reflection of how well the team did and the leader of that team and how great they did. But I like that it's kind of muddled and not clear. It makes the league interesting.
Well, so you mentioned triple doubles, so I want to talk about a different guy almost getting a triple double, and that's Brook Lopez. He was one block away against the Brooklyn Nets. He had 9 blocks, a career high 9 blocks, as the Bucks were able to win without Giannis on that particular occasion. And as we talk about awards, there's that Defensive Player of the Year award out there too. And I'd be curious from both of you where you think Brook Lopez fits into the fabric of that. He has been, again, a formidable defensive force. He's been absolutely essential, as that has been the case the last couple of years. And he certainly had a great showing against Brooklyn. Bobby Portis started in that game. He also had a very good high-level double-double. We could talk about Sixth Man of the Year, which I got to think Bobby Portis is going to be big time in that conversation. So Laurie, Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, we could also probably make an argument for Giannis, but for setting him aside now.
Right.
What do we think? Brook Lopez?
So that's one of the things I wanted to look at. And that's where I do hate some of these analytics, because Giannis is ranked. I'm sorry, I didn't check the stats this morning or even for 2 days. But the last time I checked, Giannis was ahead of Brook in the defensive rankings. But yeah. Even Giannis told me like a month ago, I don't want to face Brook defensively. Like I said, do you guys ever go at each other in practice? And he's like, thank God, no, barely no, maybe a couple of times in October. I mean, and to me, that says a lot. I I question a little bit my judgment on this. I'm biased towards Brook Lopez. I think he's phenomenal when you factor in his age and his athleticism. And I don't know why Brooklyn kept going at him. Here, throw it up there. Sure, he's going to swat it away. Like, they kept going at him without adapting and adjusting, and that's why he got 9 blocks. But I just think he's – I don't know who's really his competition for Defensive Player of the Year, especially when you talk about the specialty – of rim protection and how that cascades throughout the entire defensive philosophy for the rest of the team, what the guards can do because they know they've got him back there. Even some of the things that they can do in the paint that they can not have to worry about because they know Brook is back there. And also, let me please say, a couple of years ago, I think it was 2018, 2019, Brook was close to playing all 82 games that year. I think he got 81, and he was kind of bummed that he rested one. He has been available for everything this year. Did he sit out like one game with something? He's been amazing coming off of back surgery and all that rehab, and he's just been so stable and reliable. I don't know who truly challenges him for that award. But again, I'm biased. I see him play all the time, so I might not be the right judge.
I mean, I think that's just a really important piece if we're looking at narratives. That, like you said, coming off of back surgery, you know, mid-30s, part of his career, that's incredible. And not only is he a force, but, you know, you could have easily seen a situation where he could only play like 3/4 of the year at best. Jim, what do you think? And you can transition to talk about Bobby Portis's chances, which I actually think as I'm looking at the odds here, Brook Lopez is the odds on favorite, last I checked, to win this award, his competition being guys like Jaren Jackson, Bam Adebayo, and Giannis. I think Brook might have this. Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, Jaren Jackson Jr. is maybe he'll get there. He's a dynamic defensive player.
He's very fun.
He had missed some games. He'll probably lead the league in the average blocks per game. It won't be total because Brook's going to play more games. He's a dynamic, but he fouls too much. I mean, quite frankly, one of the reasons Memphis struggles late in games is Jaren Jackson Jr. is not playing. He hasn't figured that part out yet. And look, Bam Adebayo, very good defender. Miami is barely hanging on. No, I think this is turning into, this is going to turn into a runaway, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And Giannis is going to be first team all defense. I think Drew Holiday, is going to be an all defensive team member as well. But yeah, Brook is, I think the nine blocks is one of those like defensive highlights, right? That like some other people just needed to see and make them go, wait a minute, what's this guy doing? Real quick. He's contesting 18 shots. 15 contested twos per game. The next closest is 9. his contested total twos, or total shots is 18 per 36. I mean, he's also contesting 17 total shots per game. What does that mean? It means he's also contesting three-pointers
right
on a regular basis. And so his ability to defend the perimeter this year is pretty amazing also. By the way, the Bucks, I believe, are second or third in three-point defense this year. You'll notice, JR, we have not talked about opponents setting franchise records for threes. Brook Lopez is part of that. So he's to me is going to be the clearest cut winner. Now, Bobby Portis is interesting. He has definitely got a strong candidacy. I think even if Giannis misses more games and Bobby starts more games, he's still going to qualify, having come off the bench more often than not. And what's going to help Bobby is there isn't the Jordan Clarkson or Jamal Crawford guy averaging like 24 points a game off the bench. Like, it's Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
It's Emmanuel Quickley. It's this mix of like what the sixth man should be.
Those are the three guys, by the way. Those are the three in competition for this.
Yeah. And look, Bobby is having, he's like eighth in double doubles. He might average a double double, which that off the bench, which is incredibly rare. So that won't be a runaway. Malcolm Brogdon, Emmanuel Quickley. I mean, there is something to be said for those guys playing in Boston and New York. in terms of their attention. But yeah, I think Bobby's got a real chance at this one as well.
Could be a fascinating referendum for Bucks fans, Malcolm Brogdon versus Bobby Portis, but I do think Emmanuel quickly getting that. You know, the Knicks have gotten a lot of attention this year, and you know, some fair, a lot of it fair. And so I do think quickly would get a fair amount of consideration there. No player since the first Defensive Player of the Year award was handed out in 1983 has won the Defensive Player of the Year award at age 35 or older. Brook Lopez will be 35 by the time the award is handed out. We did have Dikembe Mutombo won at age 34, but that was his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award at that point. Like, he was a known commodity. Brook Lopez, of course, have never won this award before, so I do think that would be just an amazing accomplishment, an amazing story to have him in that conversation. Not since Kevin Garnett in 2008 has a player greater than 30 years old won the award, so really, really cool situation to have him in that conversation. Jim, I know you got to get out of here kind of quickly. I did want to touch on this this Warriors game. A little bit of a bummer. Primetime, Saturday night. The Bucks seemed like they had that game in hand. And then some turnovers rear their ugly head. The Warriors were able to tie that game, force overtime. And they took over in overtime and won that contest. West Coast is tough. The Warriors, of course, are great, particularly at home. Absolutely no shame without Giannis to take that team to overtime, in my opinion. And I am always struck, even in losses, at how great this team really is. They're just really, really good. But the turnover thing is interesting. That has been a recurring issue for them. They are bottom third team in the NBA on the turnover front. I believe it's like 14.8 per game. Now, that's not a death sentence. The Nuggets, we talked about them. They're right there at 14.8 per game. You can be one of the best teams in the NBA and give the ball away. But I wonder in the playoffs if that's going to be an issue. It seems anecdotally a little unusual for this team to struggle on that front as much as they do. Do you have any thoughts on that? Any explanation why that's been such a bugaboo and how that might impact them in the playoffs?
Yeah, two things there. One, Golden State. Look, the Warriors needed to win that game, just like Philly needed to win, just like Sacramento needs to win. Like, these are teams, very good teams, that are approaching these regular season games with the Bucks with a playoff mindset. Not that the Bucks are matching that, but I think, you know, it's more important to the other team that they win. And Steph Curry displayed that and why he's one of the best shooters of all time, if not the best. But to your broader point, JR, of the turnovers, that's once we get to sort of that bye week of the play-in and sort of the playoff preview, you can't do that. I mean, Jrue Holiday, great accountability. After the game, said it was a stupid play to turn it over there at the end of regulation. He said what he was trying to do. It didn't work. Joe Ingles sort of looked like he tried to throw it to Jrue. Jrue kind of left, and it was, and then there goes the ball. Like, will that happen in the playoffs? I don't know. It's happened for 760 whatever games. JR, on a broader point, it happens too often. And it has happened too often all year, and you just can't do it when possessions, each one means so much. I guess you'd still lean on, they've done it before, they've turned the ball over. It's not, Jrue is not the slickest ball handler. Like, he's not the point guard in that sort of way. It is something that they're going to have to be mindful of, you know, when it matters most.
Yeah, no shade toward Jrue Holiday, who creates far more turnovers than he actually gives away. But you know, that was a costly one, and the Bucks were forced to pay for it. They're now a game and a half ahead of Boston for first place in the Eastern Conference. And Jim, speaking of Boston, the Chris Middleton, their nemesis, was able to start a game this week. He started the game against Orlando. So we had just finished talking about how there was a little bit of concern that we weren't seeing him in the starting lineup, weren't seeing him ramping up to where we thought he would be full strength by the playoffs. And then he comes out and starts a game. That was necessitated a little bit, I think, by some of the injuries. But what struck you about that before I send you off here?
Yeah, very important that he got to that point. And it's not just me speculating on that. It's Chris Middleton himself saying he needed to get there. He needed to get to 30 points. He insists that the starting was whatever. And in our Golden State, for instance, he did not begin the overtime. Mike Budenholzer did not want to push him past a certain number, which I'm guessing was 34, 35 minutes. So finish the game, finish overtime. JR, it is big. Look, he knows he's going to have to play 40. and you can't just go like, I think Giannis and Drew are around, what, 32, 33 minutes a game. Brooke around there. They've done that for years now under Bud, and sort of moving up the chain, so to speak, of minutes. Chris had to get here. Chris has to be playing 30 minutes or roughly this end of the year to get to 40. I think he knew that. So definitely an important development. I will say this. I don't think that progress is going to be linear, though. I think he's going to have times where he looks, you know, where that leg or the legs aren't all the way there. And there's going to be a night where he looks amazing. I think that's part of that sort of process of him truly being ready to go for the playoffs.
All right, Jim. Well, like I said, I know you got to get out there. The Bucks playing in Sacramento on Monday night. We will be posting this podcast a little earlier than usual to encapsulate that. And they will stay on the West Coast and then coming home for a battle against the Indiana Pacers. Tyrese Halliburton hopefully will be healthy this time. He was not the last time the two teams clashed. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.
All right, Lori. Anything you want to add about seeing Chris Middleton out there before we get to something else that you wrote about this week?
Yeah, I think it's just great for his confidence, you know, and that's, again, that's a weird thing to say for a veteran like him. But and I think that honestly, part of the reason we're seeing some of these turnovers is because Mike Budenholzer, the coach, has run 922,000 different rotations out there. And that is still going to be something that's going to be worked on in the month of March. And then when they get to the playoffs and kind of maybe settle into certain rotations, I think you'll see some of those turnovers go down. So it's good. You know, Chris really worked hard and just fought through this injury. And so it's just good to see him back.
That's a really good point about the rotations. You know, one just kind of random example that has struck me is Joe Ingles working with Brooke Lopez in the pick and roll, and sometimes, you know, the passes just weren't quite right for a while, and now we've sort of seen them sort of come together, you know, because Ingles obviously got a late start to the season coming off an ACL tear, and it took a minute to get that cohesion, and now we're seeing it. And I think you're right. I think when things are much more rigid in the postseason, turnovers will be less of a deal, you know, unless it's your star players who are committing them, which in Drew Holiday's case, I guess you could point to that, but you know, I do think what I say before, Drew Holiday is such a net positive. You got to live with a little bit because, you know, you're getting a lot back. You wrote earlier this week because we put a Marquette podcast on the Point Forward podcast feed. We're going to have another one with Ben Steele. That'll be coming up. That might even land on Monday as well. The Marquette Golden Eagles are a number two seed in the NCAA tournament. They're having a phenomenal season. This is the highest seed they've actually ever gotten. The tournament didn't seed out until 1979. So, yes, there's the team that won the championship in 77. They probably would have been a one seed before that when they went into the tournament undefeated in 1 year. And in 74, they went to the final. But, like, this is as good as it gets for the modern era. And Tyler Kolek has been the engine that has driven them there. He's the Big East Player of the Year. Marquette wins the regular season and the tournament titles in the Big East. And Tyler Kolek has kind of this interesting connection with Pat Connaughton. So this story has been up at JS Online for a little while now. But give me some background on this, Lori.
Well, funny enough, Pat Connaughton showed up to a Marquette game wearing a Tyler Kolek jersey. And we're all kind of like, what? And then Pat was posting on his Instagram all these pictures of Tyler holding the championship trophy and all this stuff. Well, it turns out they come from the same AAU basketball program, which Ben Steele wrote about actually a couple of years ago. But now they've become closer friends. And of course, Pat is 30 years old. I think he's a 5-year veteran of the Milwaukee Bucks, you know, NBA champion. Like, his resume is impeccable. And he's really kind of been taking on this mentorship role throughout all of everything that he does. He does a lot of basketball clinics and camps. Shaka Smart's own daughter went to one of Pat Connaughton's camps recently. And of course, Shaka Smart is the coach of Marquette University. So the two, Pat and Tyler, just kind of realized they had a lot in common. They realized that they're kind of cut from the same cloth, as they like to put it. They're both really competitive. They both like to kind of prove people wrong, and they both like to work on their athleticism. They like to do all the work behind the scenes that you don't get to see on the court all the time. And so they developed this friendship, and it's all because of this coach, this AAU coach called Michael Grady, in for Middlesex Magic AAU team, which is like now a top perennial, top AAU team in the whole country. And they play in the Under Armour circuit, which is a big deal now, too. So it's kind of this cool bond that the two of them have. And it's and Pat is great talking about Tyler. And it was a lot of fun to do that story, especially because, of course, you know, Pat went to Notre Dame. And to see him in a Marquette jersey, is he's gotten some grief for that. But Marquette beat Notre Dame earlier this year. I believe it was in December. And right after Marquette beat Notre Dame, Tyler sent a text over to Pat Connaughton and said, hey, can you get me some Bucks tickets? And Pat was like, the nerve of this kid. So it's been fun. It's kind of cool that, you know, we're watching these elite basketball players on these elite teams, both in the city of Milwaukee at the same time. It's just a neat little story.
Yeah, I love that. The New England connection is probably pretty strong. And Kolek and the Golden Eagles have a pretty golden opportunity here. They play on Friday. Bucks play Thursday, as I mentioned. That's the game against the Pacers. There might be some time to get out to Columbus, Ohio for Pat Connaughton if you wanted to go watch Marquette play. The Bucks would not play again until Sunday, I believe. So there's a little bit of a gap. That could be interesting. We haven't talked a lot about Pat Connaughton this year. You know, he had a little bit of injuries, I want to say. I mean, like coming out of the All-Star break and
calf.
Yeah, and I know he started really slow, but I think that might be indicative of just how deep this team is. I mean, he's obviously a good contributor who's continues to do what he does, and we don't talk about him because there's so many guys on this team. You know, they just aren't missing a beat when they get, you know, they get into a whole second wave of players. And the playoff rotation is going to be interesting. I don't know who's ultimately going to lose minutes here because there are a lot of options. It's going to be interesting to see how that develops. Lori, I think that's all we've got. We've got some late night Bucks basketball with the Kings and the Suns back to back here Monday, Tuesday, 9 o'clock start times for both in Central Time Zone before they get back to play the Pacers and Raptors at home later this week. You going to stay up late to watch the Bucks? How do you make it through 9 p.m. games?
Now you got to put me on the spot.
Listen, I will tell you full stop.
No, you get up at 6 a.m. I know you're not watching.
That's right. I have young children. They need to be out the door. 6 a.m. I'm awake and I am programmed to do one thing, and that is to get my children away from me, out of the house, get them off to school. I can't do it. I've tried. And sometimes it's even an exciting game and I'm like, sorry, peace out, we'll try again in the morning and see where we're at. Cannot do it.
I know, I've texted you at 6:15, you're like, I'm making pancakes for the kids.
That's true. I've definitely become an early morning person thanks to my children. That's true.
Yeah, I will watch the games, but what I do is I bring my iPad into my, you know, I get under the covers and I'm all ready. I've got my eye mask is on, so I'm shutting my eyes physically. But I can hear the game and then I'll fall asleep to it, and that's fine. I can do that. I want to know what's going on. And yeah, this is such a special team. Normally I would not stay up, no way, but at least not for the whole second half. But yeah, I will now.
I remember a game in Sacramento a couple years ago when Eric Bledsoe, I want to say, had a really huge turnover late or something, like forced a turnover late, and they won. It was thrilling overtime. That was only a couple years ago, but I felt so much younger then when I could stay up to watch these games. And oh yeah, those are the days.
Still young.
Oh, Lori. I'm just not. I'm so sorry. But that's gonna do it for this edition of the Point Forward Podcast. Any last thoughts? Anything you have rolling around in your head that you want to throw out here?
Well, this is just the third loss by the Bucks, I think, since January 16th.
That's
so
true.
I do laugh at the people who are like, oh, I wish the Bucks had gotten this one. It's like, come on. Even Brooke Lopez said it was a positive experience this last game, and I agree with that. There's a lot of, you know, with Curry having 36 points or whatever, they can look at what they can do defensively and change things up, and let's just keep everything in perspective here. This is still a great, really solid team. And I'm going to have to brace myself against, like, I just expect them to win it all. And if they don't, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people.
They are so good. They're just so good.
They're so deep, too.
I know. And yes, the couple losses they've had, they've kind of blown them. But like,
But you know, and you and I don't even talk about Grayson Allen's contribution.
Right.
We don't talk about Javon Carter's contribution. We don't talk. Well, there's
Connaughton,
so many.
You're right. I mean, all these guys.
And we really could. And the deep coaching staff that the Bucks have. There's so many stories I want to get to. So, you know, it's going to be a fun month of the final regular season. And normally it would be like just check out and be boring. So
yeah,
it's good.
Someone needs to hire Charles Lee. That guy's been on this staff a long time. He's clearly NBA head coaching material. Somebody out there hire that man. I do think, Lori, the Boston Celtics series is going to be the one to watch. I do think that Eastern Conference Finals could be the tougher thing for them than the finals. I think that that's the one I'm zeroed in on in my mind. And if they get past that, I think it's another ring, no matter who comes out of the West. Maybe that's too bold. I don't know. But that is it for the Point Forward podcast. Thank you again to Lori Nickel, to Jim Ozarski for joining us this week. Keep an eye on this feed. Again, there will be a Marquette podcast dropping with my guy Ben Steele. Got to keep that Milwaukee basketball connection going because of where Marquette is sitting. We'll do at least one more of those, and if they keep playing, maybe we'll do like a Final Four preview. Who knows? The sky's the limit at this point. So keep it here for that, and thank you for tuning in. We will be back next week talking Bucks. We'll see you guys real soon.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.